You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla DeRoche, and we have the team behind A Wrinkle in Time. They're all middle schoolers, correct, folks? And they will go around and introduce themselves. We'll start with their director, who is an adult, Jared.
I am not in middle school. Though doing this, it brings me back to my middle school days and how much, wow, I really did not like middle school. And so maybe this is like redemption for me. My name is Jared Griffin, and I am the Kodiak Middle School Drama Club director slash coach.
Okay, so A Wrinkle in Time is a great performance for the actors, but also for some of the tech people. So why don't you, when you're introducing yourselves, why don't you say what you're doing or what character you're playing?
My name is Krista Simpler, and I am playing Meg. I'm an actor.
Hi, my name is Brooke A. Pitts, and I am playing Aunt Beast. I am an actor.
My name is Ashley Zeekman. I'm a techie, and I do sound.
My name is Lucas Barker. I'm a techie, and I'm doing lights.
All right, so why don't we start with a little bit of the plot, and then we can talk to the actors about some of your characters, and then we'll talk about the characters of lighting and sound, because those are going to be pretty important in this performance. Jared, could you summarize basically what the play or the book was about, and some of your history with that book?
Sure.
And you're not restricted to 30 seconds. You can spend the needed time.
So you're saying that an English professor has as much time as he wants to talk about
do.
A book? Oh my gosh! I don't know why I brought you four with me. Okay, so. A Wrinkle in Time, much like as I've been talking around the community about the play, everybody tells me, oh my gosh, I read the book when I was a kid. And it was the same thing for me too. I read it when I was a kid because I just loved the space and time dimension kinds of elements to it. So what it comes down to is a brother and sister, Meg and Charles Wallace, who's played by Naomi Griffin, team up with a friend, Calvin, played by Acacia Berbilis. Berbilis, thank you. They are visited by three celestial beings. These are former stars who have turned into what we would probably call some kind of witches or guardian angels. Mrs. Witch, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. What's-It, who tell them that their father is trapped on a planet called Kamazots. And so the story is about these three kids traveling across space and time and dimensions, visiting various different worlds, trying to find their father and rescue their father.
How the right. book is written and how celestial it is and how much wonder it creates for the reader. Because when I was a kid, I kind of thought of it as like the Harry Potter owl. That brings you yeah. a letter. You know, have you guys read have you guys read yeah. Harry Potter? Of course you have.
are you familiar with this character?
This obscure book.
It was in England written.
I thought some celestial being might possibly appear to me one day and like we would go
dream.
Rescue someone. Right? I don't know, like no one was kidnapped in my life, but I thought maybe one should be so we could do something about it, like go to planets. So this is one of the books that really was one of my seminal favorite books ever. And I'm curious as to whether you guys have read this book.
I have.
All right. What you have, okay. Uh-huh. So you have, and who else has read this?
I haven't yet.
I've read it like literally right before I actually knew what the play was going to be about. And I was like, I can't believe this is happening. I literally just read this book, so I know exactly what to do.
So you know you're meant to be in this performance. And for those of you who have not read it, I'm going to, as a radio individual, I will be assigning this to you to be reading this. I don't know if I have the authority. Do I have the authority to do that?
Yes.
Okay, you have to read this book, young lady and gentleman, because in order to portray something on stage, you want to fully understand it. Also, it's just an excuse to read a really great book.
And there's a graphic novel adaptation, which is also fabulous. It's fabulous, yeah.
Amazing. I'm going to go get that right now on Amazon. No offense, Kodiak stores. There's not a bookstore. So or the library.
I think the library has a copy, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so let's all stop by the library. We can read the graphic novel first.
Then the book, then the movie. Exactly.
Or the book, the graphic novel, or the movie, the graphic novel, and then the book, which is the opposite literary direction to go.
Sure.
So, Jared, we're going to get to the actors eventually in just like 5 minutes, but could you talk a little bit about your history of seeing this performance? Because when I first heard that you were doing this, I'm like, who would turn this into a theater piece? This is impossible to portray. So why don't you talk about a little bit about that?
I saw a theatrical adaptation when I was a freshman in high school and I was living in Albuquerque, and the University of New Mexico was putting it on. And so I went with some friends, and it was done on a stage floor. It was square. The floor was lit in various different ways with lasers and other kinds of lights. And then they had a lighting grid overhead. There were no sets. There were no props. There were no curtains. It was all light and sound on this blank floor, and I just remember being just amazed at the experience that they could transport you to different worlds just by using light and sound. That you don't need to change the curtains, you don't need to change a flat or a drop or anything like that. And what it does, I think, is it scales back the physical elements of the story to emphasize the metaphysical and spiritual and almost kind of religious elements of the story. Makes you focus on the characters and the idea that that love is the most powerful thing in the universe. And so it strips away all of that other maybe it's almost like watching it in a black and white film. You know, in a black and white film, you're not distracted by, you know, colors, really. You're really focused on the people and the shades and that kind of world that it builds. Well, I think, you know, A Wrinkle in Time kind of does that same thing. It says, you know, what if you're not connected to anything in the physical world? What are you left with? You're left with great evil, or you're left with great love. And so, which is the better of the two?
What did you choose this performance or this book to do?
Well, in the middle school drama, what I try to do, I try to alternate a male protagonist. We do a play with a male protagonist one year and then a play with a female protagonist the next year. And so last year was kind of special. We did Shakespeare. We did The Tempest because it was the anniversary of Shakespeare's death. So this year we went back to a female protagonist. There are not, and this is really sad to say about our culture, is that we don't have a lot of stories with very strong female protagonists appropriate for a middle school audience and for middle school actors. I was looking through my bookshelf, and then I saw the book, and then when I saw Wrinkle in Time, it triggered that memory of watching it in the ninth grade, and then it triggered that memory of who Meg is. Meg is, she's a strong female protagonist, but she's smart. She's a STEM kid. She's of science, technology, engineering, math. That's who she is. But she also is really angry at the world. She's very insecure. She thinks she's ugly. She doesn't fit in. She's a misfit. And so I thought, wow, this is a perfect middle school, you know, play. So it really had to do with the character of Meg, and that's why I'm counting on Krista so much. This is my dream,
no
Krista.
Pressure,
don't
oh,
you
no.
dare.
Krista,
crush my dream.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your character? What is she like? And how are you choosing to portray her?
Well, Meg, she has a chip off the shoulder, as you call it, about everyone. Like, she always thinks on the negative side, usually. Like in this one scene, her mom is trying to probably make her look good, but then she's like, Mom. And then she says, it's really funny. And she, the only people that she really loves truly, is, Charles Wallace, which is her little brother, and it's like he can see inside of her, and she's like trusts him completely, almost like he's her age almost. Mm-hmm. He's almost more mature. And then my mom, not my mom, but Meg's mom, Meg, she trusts her completely, and she loves her to death, and she knows she worries about her father, and she tries to help her through that, and they kind of help each other through that loss of their father, and then they go and they find these three witches, and Meg doesn't trust them at all. She has no idea who the heck they are, and she just, one of them just comes into their house, and then she learns about tesseracts and transportation around different planets, and then she goes into all this wonder, and Meg, she really gets excited about a lot of things, but she always has that little bit of negativity, and then in the very end, she figures out that love and happiness are, like, the best thing in the world, that the key to the universe or something, like, Mr. Griffin said, so.
So beautiful.
Can you relate to her at all?
Krista is one of the angriest kids that I've
ever heard. Well,
Is there anything about her that you would say, oh, that's kind of like me, or that's not at all like me?
Well, I'm kind of geeky, nerdy like she is. Like, I try and get good grades, and I love science, and I did the Cyber Mission Project, which if that was it with Meg, she would probably do that. But I am not very angry. I guess
that's probably good.
I think my number one director's note to Krista is to stop smiling. Really, I mean, I think literally every scene, stop smiling, Krista.
Could you talk a little bit about your character?
Aunt Beast is she's kind of hard to explain, but she's very caring over Meg when she sees her with her father and everyone else. And she kind of takes care of her while her father and Calvin are away with the other beasts. And in the end, she offers to come with her after she tessers. And she's just one of those kind of characters that you want to be because of how caring and sweet she is. She's a very motherly figure.
What kind of creature is she?
We don't really know. She kind of, the way I see her, like I imagined her, I kind of imagined her as like a Chewbacca. I don't know. But that's kind of how I imagined her.
And so you have a special prop that you use. Tell me about that.
Yes, these stilts. That's very complicated. The first day, Friday, I had run on them for the first time, and it was not very easy. These stilts would not cooperate. They kept falling off my feet. I fell over once, and while I was trying to get on stage, they wouldn't stop squeaking. All you hear was crack, crack.
And so how tall off the, how high off the ground are the stilts?
I don't really know the exact height.
I think there are 3 feet.
Oh, geez.
Wow, that's almost half your height. You might be a little taller than that.
And talk about the rest of your...
And then the hand stilts also, I haven't used them on these stilts yet, but I kind of think they'll help me walk around much more, and they make me look like I'm crawling around.
Oh, wow. That should be creepy.
Yeah. It's very much like if you've seen like The Lion King on Broadway or know those costumes, that's kind of exactly what they're using, hand stilts and these foot stilts. So I think Brooke is going to be probably the physically biggest character we've ever had on the Drama Pod stage.
Oh, really?
Well, you got to see it. I'm tempted. I definitely want to see that happening. And so is there anything covering the stilts?
Yes. Ashley over here, she covered them with this black kind of finger gloves, and she put them all over them to make it look furry and to make it match my other costume, the
Chewbacca.
That's very creative, Ashley. How did you decide to do that?
Mr. Griffin mainly had the idea, since the stilts weren't like a darker color themselves, we had to cover them so they'd look more like they were arms on the beast and not just like these long stilts that she all of a sudden has. So we just stapled a whole load of like she said, like hand or arm gloves to them to cover it up and make it look furrier.
And so are you're doing sound too?
Yes, I do sound.
Okay, so what all is your job here? Sound, costuming?
It's mainly sound, but I did help with the stilts because those needed to be done and nobody else we could really had to do those. And I wasn't really doing sound yet either. I barely got sound yesterday. So it's, yeah, basically my job.
How are you guys using sound in this performance?
We have a CD with voiceovers for the witches. And then I forgot the name of the program we're using. But Mr. Griffin put together sounds of
Audacity.
Like Audacity.
Audacity, my fave.
He just put together like wind and all the sounds we needed, and then I just click play and pause. It's not easy. More than play and pause, but
you're like a live DJ up there. She's like live mixing, live editing, and we're going. It's amazing.
Is that so?
Yeah.
How do you live edit?
I don't know exactly.
Start and stop when Dr. Griffin says so.
Yeah, no, that timing is very important. It's not easy. You have to pay attention and be able to and hope the technology works with you. And, you know, once you learn Audacity, you can apply that to a lot of different things, like, you know, radio stations, right?
Yeah.
You can do sound editing and also that probably helps you out with multimedia projects. You might be able to apply that to video. So that's a really cool skill to learn. Are there any other costuming things that you're doing?
No, I really only did stilts, and then I helped with set.
Okay, I did set crew in college. So what's the set like?
So we have a haunted house for the witch's house, and there's boards on, I forgot the name of them, the periactoids.
You got it.
There's boards on the periactoids to represent the walls, so we painted like styrofoam to look like wood boards. So.
And there's like probably 50 of those. There's a lot of them.
Like almost 60, I think, actually.
Wow, that's a very smart idea to use something lighter than wood. Good going. And so are there any other costumes that are especially notable?
The witches, you know, all three of the witches they're all distinct. Like Miss What's It, she has to transform from looking like a homeless bag lady, cat lady woman into like this glorious bald headed Pegasus.
Same for that.
It's very creepy. But once you add in the sound effects, mm-hmm. and then with the voiceovers that Ashley was talking about, we distort. We have to distort the dialogue, and so it sounds different. And so the witches are all different. Miss Witch is kind of a little more angelic. Then there's the happy medium, who's played by Juliana Jones, who she's just like this crazy alien gypsy. The Kamazotzians are like green with silver glitter on them, but they're dressed as if they're from the American 1950s suburbs, like, you know, Leave It to Beaver, Donna Reed. So it's like every scene there's something. Yeah, something a little different for everybody. And then David Lopez plays the father, and he found this really cool trench coat.
He looks like Doctor Who.
He looks kind of like Doctor Who.
I was just thinking that all these characters seem like they're directly from Doctor Who.
Well, you know, this book was written in the 1960s, and I think that's when Doctor Who started up, and in the late 60s, I think. So
yeah, I think that's right. And I
Ray Bradbury. And...
I was stunned when I realized that this was written in the 60s, and I just read, I think Ray Bradbury.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yes, yeah.
Which was, I felt, much more 60s than this book. Because when you take a few aliens and you throw them in there, suddenly you feel more removed from whatever human time is. So, did you guys realize this was written in the 1960s when you first read it?
Yes.
No.
I had no idea. I thought this was, like, written, like, in the 90s.
Yeah, I thought it was the 90s, too, because that's when I read it. I projected pretty hard on that. There were no cell phones then, either, so there were fewer indicators then. There was easier to mistake things written in the 60s and 70s as something written in the 90s. I'm sure that... it's very clearly not written in the 2010s or anything. There are no cell phones, no technology, no internet. People are studying, not on their phones. No offense, you guys.
But that's what makes the genre so timeless and universal. And I think that's why, that's why books like this, A Wrinkle in Time, they're going to be around for centuries.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how in 50 years. People see the books written in 2010 and see that certain kinds of cell phones are being used or certain kinds of technologies are being used because we have that dated, those dated items in there. So you guys, if you write a book, which I'm sure one of you will, just don't include cell phones. They're just in a room, like thinking.
Yeah,
it's probably a good idea. And so you do, you are doing the lighting.
Yes.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit about how lighting plays in? Because I hear it's a big deal.
Yeah, lighting's pretty important because we need to light each of the scenes differently. There's a lot of ones on different planets, so, you know, there might be, like, a red or blue lights. also, at nighttime, we need to, you know, dim them down. It's used to set the mood, basically. If it's a happy scene, we'd have them all bright and, you know, everyone's cheery. If it's a bit more mellow, we'd make the stage red and turn everything down a bit.
And so, do you have a background in lighting, or is this something that...
Oh, no, this is the first time I've ever done it.
Your background, I feel like it's like, yes, when I graduated from college, I was a blah, blah, blah on the stage.
Lucas has been my sound guy for the past couple years, and so...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, really? So you can give some tips about...
He hasn't given me any tips.
Oh, Ashley!
I never used a computer when I was doing sound. I had a CD player. Fast forward to each effect.
Yeah. How old are you?
I am 13. My birthday is tomorrow, though.
Oh!
Happy birthday, Lucas!
Yeah. You'll be in high school next year, right?
Yep.
You will be?
Yes.
Okay. I forgot how the age of high schoolers nowadays. So how old are you guys? You guys are all in middle school, right?
I'm 14.
You're 14?
I'm 13.
13.
All right. You guys can... If you guys keep on taking part in local productions, you know, in 5 years or 7 years, you could be amazing lighting, sound people, and actors, and you can apply Audacity to a bunch of different things. So these are really good experiences that you're getting here. Do you think that you want to continue doing lighting and sound, or do you think you want to try acting next time?
I think I'm going to stick to lighting or sound.
Yeah.
I don't like being on stage or camera.
That's okay. I did that too. I mean, now I'm in radio, so you know how I feel about being on camera.
That's what's so great about the theater arts is that there is something for everybody to do, regardless of your interest. You don't want to be an artist or a painter or an actor. We have engineering to do. We have lighting. We have computer work that needs to be done. So I think it's like the one art form where whatever your interest is, there is a place for you in the theater.
Mm-hmm. And while we're talking about an adaptation of a book, I want to kind of hear a little bit about what you guys are reading. What are you reading in your free time?
I like to read a lot of fantasy and fictional. I like reading the book series Warriors because I'm a crazy cat lady, as people call me. it's really nice to get a feel of just a lot of how you'd imagine a cat in the wild with a bunch of other cats. And I also like fantasy, like I said. There's a book called Carry On, and it's about this guy named Simon Snow, and he went to a magical school, and he had to fight a dragon, and he was the chosen one, and he didn't really know how to do that.
He didn't know how to fight a dragon.
Yeah.
What a scrub.
What are they teaching kids in school these
days? I don't know.
Not that.
What about you guys? Are you reading anything particular?
I started reading Lord of the Rings because I love the movies, and I happened to have found the book laying around my house, so I started reading that the other night. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy like fiction and fantasy and those kind of books.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys reading anything? No pressure. Sometimes school gets hectic.
Yeah, I'm reading What You Always Wanted. It's like about this girl when she moves to Texas, and she like has a new school, and she goes to a new school, and she finds it's actually about theater. it's really funny.
Nerd.
Say that, but and she goes and there's this next door there's this lady, and she's her new neighbor, and they and she stops by, and she says and she learns, and she's an actor, and she learns that that the lady that stopped by was like the drama director of like I don't know if it was of her high school or if it was of her community or something. And she was like, oh, that's great. And then she asked, and she thought she was going to ask her to like go into like this crazy play, because she had to go to like some sort of production. And
I have to interrupt you.
See it.
We have about one more minute, but thank you for sharing that theater book. Do you want to just, before we close up, do you want to just say when the performances are?
Yes. Friday at 7:00, Saturday at 2:00 at the Drama Pod. It is a middle school production, but we invite the public. Everybody should definitely come and see this. I don't think I've had a group of kids work so hard on a production before. So Friday at 7, Saturday at 2.
All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.